This is Chair Tamara Banovich, and I am calling this meeting of the Lane County Animal Services Advisory Committee to order. Today is Monday, September 12th. It is 3 p.m., and I will let the other committee members who are present introduce themselves and anybody else who would care to. We don't have a quorum at this time unless another member comes in later, so we're just going to cover some of the discussion for Harriet Smith's gift, and I think maybe Janetta had a question she wanted to know. Okay, so again, I'm Tamara Banovich, Chair, and
John Bradfield.
And Dwayne Penfold.
Okay. Do you care to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Carrie Lieberman from Green Hill Humane Society.
Jacqueline Rudebeck from Green Hill Humane Society.
Rachel Gurman, Animal Services.
Charlie Conrad, staff.
And then we have two members of the public present. If you care to introduce yourselves, I'll let you go ahead.
Keisha English.
Okay. Janetta Overholzer.
Okay, great. Thank you. So the first item on the agenda for today was public comment. And Janetta, did you want to speak today then? No? Okay. So Misha was going to be speaking in relation to Harriet Smith's gift, so we'll bump her down to prior to that discussion. Let's see. Do we have any other changes or additions to the agenda that we haven't discussed already? And then, so Charlie, did you have any staff updates?
I do. I have a couple that I was just going to touch up on that the committee asked us to keep them apprised of. I believe it was Mr. Calderwood last time asked for a rabies update. So in the packet, there are the rabies reporting certificates for last fiscal year. It's July 1st, 2015 to June 30th, 2016. And next month or the next meeting, I'll bring the quarterly report in for what we've got fiscal year to date at that point. The other thing I will touch on that we had, the committee asked us to keep them apprised of. If you remember, a few months ago, we had a discussion about some issues out at Poodle Creek with the potbelly pigs. We've kept a log of when we've been out there. We were out there on July 12th. We received a call from Mr. Delbert Martin. He was one of the people, one of the neighbors that came and spoke. And we didn't get any calls regarding the issues out there until recently. We had the two calls within the last week, both from a neighbor who I believe also came and spoke, and the pot-bellied pigs were out in her driveway. The one that she called in a couple days ago, she said that the pot-bellied pig and the capybara were out in her driveway mid-afternoon. She went out and honked her horn in front of the owner's home, and that the owner is aware of the fact that her critters are back out. So we have not been out there. Our animal welfare officer is out for a while, 6 to 8 weeks, medical leave. So we won't be able to do much with this unless something gets stirred up and Mike and or I go out there and work on the situation again. But just wanted to update the committee on that. We've been out there a couple times or received a couple calls, but we haven't been out there on that. And that is it for now, unless there are any questions on that at all. Okay.
Okay. Can you let us know where we're at with regards to the minutes?
The minutes?
Summaries?
Yes, we contacted our IS information services. We went through, reviewed, Rachel went through and reviewed all the minutes, gave them the correct dates that they should be on, so we're just waiting for them to move the recordings to the right dates. But we've identified all the incorrect ones, and I think there were 8 total, 6 of which were on incorrect dates.
Yep.
2 of them were correct, so. And okay, we'll get that. The other thing that we've got going is the county is redoing its website, and we will be able to upload the minutes ourselves and have immediate control over where they end up. So, go ahead.
So what's the story on somebody being out 8 weeks with no replacement?
Our animal welfare officer, we only have one for the county. And so when he's out, we have no fill-in.
The person has a job-related injury, or is it
He's on medical leave.
So you have no backup plan. You just stop that service when that person is out.
Correct. We have nobody to fill in. We contacted Springfield, and they can't offer any assistance. So that's a service that we cannot provide.
that's where we could hear a lot of repercussions.
Correct.
It should almost be a plan.
There is a plan, and unfortunately we only have one animal welfare officer, so our plan is to try and handle the situations as best we can and work through it, but we don't have a physical body to go out and handle any of the calls. And so public relations effort is all we can really do at this point in time. Until we get another position funded, we don't have anybody.
So the funding for that position goes to some sort of medical payment to this person? I mean, if they're gone for 8 weeks, that money can't shift to someone else? That's not part of your SAFE program? You're self-insured?
We don't have anybody else qualified. We only have one animal welfare officer for the county. He's the only one we have. So if there's, depending on what the call is, the sheriff's office would be the backfill. Okay. So if they decide they don't want to handle a call that we send to them, that's their decision. That's their choice. We have no input on that.
You understand where my question is.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, the first thing's going to happen in a committee like this, they're going to say, well, what the hell's going on? You know, you guys aren't even available. We need you.
Correct.
And you're right.
Yes. Yep. And if that's something that we can change, I'd absolutely love to get that to change. But right now, we only have one person to fill that spot. And so when they're not there, then we go to the sheriff's office, and we rely on them to handle any calls that they'll handle. But given their policies and procedures and what they actually respond to, I have no idea whether they'll respond to them or not.
What I'm saying is there's no chance to have a backup officer that has the training that can actually take a call during these intervals of time when people are gone, because people are invariably gone.
Correct.
And the answer is no.
Correct.
It requires extensive training, or what does it require?
Training, certification, financing. County's got to be able to support another position. Somebody that's willing to do it.
And there's no one at the sheriff's office with any of that experience, or?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if they have any formal, full welfare officer experience or not.
And Eugene and Springfield are unwilling to.
Correct.
Pick up.
Correct.
Well, there's hardly any other work pitcher. Even the Humane Society has backups for every position, because you can't just close, right? You have someone there that backs up somebody else that can't be there. And to me, there's an irony that you're disclosing to me that doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's a bad business policy if it's a business policy. It's incredibly bad. I mean, just leads to nothing but negative PR.
Yeah, if we can afford another person to fill in or to back them up, that would be ideal. There aren't any funds at this point in time for that.
Janetta, go ahead. Is there enough money to fund somebody if you could find someone as a backup?
I don't know where those funds would come from at this point in time.
So in other words, it's a budget issue, and we need to get a hold of our commissioners.
Correct.
Okay. There is. No. But the nature of my question was, the county does not have a SAFE program where if you're injured on the job.
There's workman's comp.
Correct. So this is not a workman's comp claim, because then they're paid through workman's comp, and you'd have the monies that were generated for the person that is currently not working to pay for somebody else.
We don't have anybody that can fill that spot. We have nobody that's certified, nobody that's qualified, nobody that's hired, nobody that's been interviewed. We do not have anybody that can fill that spot.
Well, that should maybe be something in the future to work out some kind of plan in case this happens again, to do that, to have a backup plan.
Another animal welfare officer agreed will be ideal.
Yeah.
And if we can make that happen, we will.
You know, that's the problem right there. If you guys have such job identification, I cross-train everybody. Everybody in my clinic has three jobs they do. If they reset, they also can put people in exam rooms, and they can back up in surgery. I mean, every person is cross-trained. The county only has one person that does this particular job. That means my job description is I get to do X, Y, Z. You guys have no job descriptions where you have more than one purpose?
The issue that we run into with the public sector is it's not like the private sector when you start dealing with labor negotiations and labor unions and collective bargaining agreements.
That's one of your problems.
And that's a public sector issue. It's not a problem with Lane County. It's a public sector issue that we have certain things that we have to abide by. And we can't just hire, I can't send Rachel out there to go handle these things. I can't do it. It's against labor negotiations. That's bad practice for me to send office staff out to handle this. So
they can have 20 people sitting on their butts doing nothing here, but they can't go out and assist somebody that really needs help out in the country.
Who is they?
When you talk about staff that are presently here, okay? Yeah. There can be people that are underutilized here, but you can't utilize them someplace else.
We don't have anybody that's underutilized.
Okay.
So would you...
Yeah, we'll end it. It's
okay.
Not worth talking about.
Okay.
So what would it take to for us as a committee to try to initiate something with the commissioners to change this?
It would take some sort of motion, some sort of committee discussion, some sort of recommendation that to increase the staffing for LCAS. The whatever leverage the committee has with the board, a motion, something going up to them with a recommendation.
All right, moving on then. Greenhill, do you want to do your presentation? And I'm going to suggest that we switch things around and let you go ahead and do yours, Charlie, and then we can go to Greenhill, and you can end with your information on the gift from Harriet Smith, and then we can go to Misha. Does that sound reasonable to everyone?
Yeah.
Okay.
So would you like me to go over the part regarding Harriet Smith or the statistics?
The numbers? Statistics.
Okay. I'll just keep the numbers brief. In front of you, you've got the numbers. We're only a couple months into the fiscal year, so we don't have a whole lot. And as I said previously, the number of calls that we'll be going out on will be drastically decreased over the next couple months. But right now, you can kind of see what you have. I don't think there's anything one way or the other that I'm going to highlight or bring out. And I'll let Kerry talk about the Greenhill statistics, if there's anything that he wants to bring out in those or to highlight.
Go ahead. Sure. Just a few things from numbers. So CATS, our intake in the month of August was down compared to last August. So fewer CATS in the doors, and we were down by 38%, so pretty significant margin. But with CATS, what we really want to look at and focus on is kind of the broader picture. So, so far, we're 2 months into this fiscal year. So the fiscal year to date, our CAT intake is down 10%. But as compared to last year. But if you look at the calendar year to date, we're up 6%. So it's just that kitten season and the cyclical seasonal cat intake hit at an earlier time this year than it did last year. So just wanted to, because that's not obvious just from the monthly reports that you guys get, and unless you took them all and laid them out and looked at them side by side. So I wanted to point that out. Our cat adoptions at the First Avenue location were up by 17% over same month last year. So that's, again, they're coming in earlier, they're in foster, then they come back and they are made available for adoption at an earlier point in the year compared to where we were at previous year. Dog intake has been significantly up compared to last August. We were up 41% in terms of numbers of dogs coming in the door during that month. For the first 2 months of the fiscal year, our dog intake is up 19% compared to where we were at this point last year. And calendar year to date, it's up 12%, so more dogs coming in the doors. During the month of August, our return to owner rate for dogs was 70%, which we're very pleased with. 93 dogs were returned to their owners, which is It makes for a very, very busy month for everyone. Conversely, though, adoption numbers are lower when more of them are getting returned to owner, as we've discussed in the past, and there are fewer that are made available for adoption. We did also transfer a larger number of dogs to the Greenhill location than we did during August of last year. And again, that's when that intake is up, then we try and move them out. If they're not getting returned to owner, then we'll try and use the space at the Greenhill location, transfer some more dogs up there and make them available. So with that, I will answer any questions that the committee has, but I just wanted to kind of point out what we're looking at so far this year.
Nobody has any questions?
Me, no.
I'm okay.
All right.
Okay.
So this is about Harriet's gift. Oh, I sent to, or actually Tamara passed on to the committee a list of suggestions that we made. The my understanding of the gift is that it's a gift to Lane County Animal Services. So my focus on usage of the money pertains very specifically to the work that is being done through First Avenue Shelter or to the physical space of First Avenue Shelter. I tailored some of this based on the feedback that her friend spoke about. Much of that discussion was actually about programs that were, I would say, outside of the scope of what the work that LCAS currently does or the work that First Avenue Shelter specifically currently does. So I didn't really address many of those issues or repeat many of them. I think they're great programs. They would be new additions to the system, and so I didn't really. That wouldn't be my recommendation. I also want to say this was very much through the lens of the activities at First Avenue Shelter, and also we just heard about other LCAS activities that could use some funding. So, you know, you may actually want to expand this. Like this, I definitely don't want this to be presented as the only ideas that could occur with the use of this money, because this committee can obviously come up with a number of very wonderful uses for the money that are outside the specific sheltering activity. So I also wrote this list down, and they're actually, as I'm looking at it, I kind of wish I rank ordered them. I didn't rank order these at all. And in fact, I broke them into equipment/physical needs for the shelter and then program needs. And I actually think the programs are more important in some ways than the physical needs, although the physical needs are kind of nice, they would be nice, easy fixes to some pretty serious issues that occur at the shelter. The programs, on the flip side, would address issues that this community has and that really affects people more than animals, although I do want to talk probably first, specifically about the Emergency Medical Care Fund for stray and injured animals. The county does, and you could probably jump in, the county does designate some money for animals that come in medical distress that go to like the emergency vet clinic and probably some other clinics.
Basically, the emergency vet clinic is who calls us.
It's not clear as to you could answer. Is there a fund specific for that, or is it a case by case basis, or how does the call get made as to what is funded or what isn't?
That goes through Mike. So when an animal comes in, usually they come in weekends or after hours. The vet will call Mike, talk to him, and Mike will authorize Mike Russell. He will authorize whether the continued treatment for the animal. Somewhat depends on whether the owner is known or unknown, what the condition, what the prognosis is, and then he'll make that call. There is a limit that he tries to keep within in terms of what the county will spend on the animals, but we do have funds designated that we'll spend to try and help the animal out. So that's strictly his call.
Yeah, so our recommendation here would be to make sure that that fund is funded with this gift. It would ensure that the money lasts longer, as that was a value that I heard expressed at the last meeting, which is that the intention isn't to spend the money all at once, but to spread it out over years, if not in perpetuity. And the thought would be that that would be a direct way to help animals that specific to this function of stray animals being out there that need help. that fund was well funded.
Mm-hmm.
And I broke it on my list. I broke it down between county and then smaller city. And the reason I highlighted those two is that one would be specific for the county, which is another question about this gift: is should it only go to county animals or should it go out further?
You mean unincorporated?
Or unincorporated county animals or further. So the city of Eugene and Springfield both have funds already. It's not clear to us as to whether or not the smaller cities have their own funds, and my sense is that they don't. So we would, you know, encourage that fund to be extended if it was possible given the nature of the gift. The other two programs that I talked about are actually in relation to what was expressed at the last meeting. A boarding fund for elderly low income or crisis. And so I extended it. We talked a lot about the elderly at the last meeting. That I actually see that need as greater in other situations, which are low income individuals or individuals in crisis, regardless of age. But my intention behind that is a fund that would be used for people to apply to for care for their animals in temporary situations, whether that's at one of the shelters or at a private boarding facility or a veterinary facility or something like that. It's a need that we hear about constantly, and we already address it at First Avenue to a certain extent in severe crisis. Immediately rush to the hospital or immediately rush to jail. But people are often, you know, want to have a little bit of foresight of, I know that this crisis is pending, and so can you help? If the funding was there, they could get more help. And then kind of the same goes for the fees, licensing, and vaccine fund for those same categories. Right now, if an animal comes to our shelter at First Avenue, and they can't pay any of those, they still get their animal back. Green Hill eats that. And that's currently how the system works. It would be great if it was funded in some direct way. I put estimates of dollar figures. That one is actually somewhere between $5,000 and $20,000 a year, depending on the situation.
Can you explain that more clearly? What is it that they're actually doing?
So if an animal comes in stray to the First Avenue shelter, there are fees associated with that.
Yes, of course.
Based on length of stay. If they don't have a rabies, they have to license in order to, right? So there's a license fee, there's a rabies vaccination fee. There may be other fees related. Those are the primary ones that I highlighted. If they can't pay, that this is public at this point, but if they can't pay, we still give the animal back.
It's the same thing that happens in veterinary hospitals when people get a broken leg fixed and then come in with no money.
Right.
You're stuck with a dog or you're stuck with the bill.
Yeah.
The bill is usually easier to deal with than the dog. You know what I mean? As far as long-term,
right,
or whatever.
Right, so, exactly. Yeah, I mean, you know, generally these are, we fully believe that people are telling us the truth about their situations.
That's where you're making a big mistake, but that's,
yeah,
okay.
Well,
most people are not.
But yeah, I mean, like, for some situations, we're actually paying the license fee. So it's really, it's kind of funny. Like, we're ending up licensing animals as a nonprofit or anything. But that's how the system is currently working. We do that because we feel it's in the best interest of the animal and the person.
I don't think that should, I think that as a group, we should ask that Lane County, not Bill Green Hill. You know, I mean, there's something
yeah,
that could reduce that.
And I forget if we've addressed it. I know it was on my list of things to address.
The rabies,
I don't know if I ever did in the
rabies is one thing, but
yeah,
you know,
the,
I mean,
license.
The rabies, you have to eat the cost of the rabies shot, but the license is that's an owie.
Yeah.
So that is,
yeah, I don't remember if we ever addressed that.
Rubbing dirt in
our
wounds a little bit,
that,
huh?
Mike.
Yeah.
It was on my list.
I agree.
I agree, because there is, you know, the, right, we're just passing on, or we're eating an expense that
it
doesn't need to be. Anyway, so yes. So that was it with programs that I had suggested. All of those, again, they're nothing, it's like I'm not creating a new program, and that was kind of my intention. I didn't want to create something that had its own additional expense. I wanted to figure out a good way to fund things that were already existing and could be expanded. And then in terms of the physical needs for the shelter, I'm going to bounce around, actually. I'll go down the list, but I'll tell you where my priorities are. I, at the top of the list, actually, but not from priority-wise, is dishwashing and utility sink. There's one central utility area within the shelter, and it's all just deteriorating at this point. The dishwasher no longer works for the functions that we need it for, and we're looking at replacing that. Not a critical need, I would say, but it's a definite need. Repair the fencing in the yards, I would say, is closer to critical need, primarily for a safety issue with the dogs that are out in the yards. And it's actually not hugely expensive. It's about $2,500. We have an estimate to do that work. Of equal priority would be dog doors in each kennel. We've explored, and we should, might actually address it. I'm not sure what you're going to speak about, but we've been looking at different ways of maintaining heat within the shelter, in the dog kennels in particular. There's still discussion amongst the people at the city of Eugene about the best way to accomplish it through a heating system. But what we actually know is that if we put dog doors in, that would control the heat better than pretty much anything. And there is one manufacturer of swinging dog doors. They're kind of like a saloon-style swinging doors. They're very expensive, unfortunately. So if we start to go in this direction, we may actually look for an alternative, but they're about $800 a piece. And they would basically be in that transfer area between the outside and the inside, and they'd be swinging, and that way heat wouldn't transfer or cool wouldn't transfer as well. Along those same lines, a number of those dog transfer doors that used to be called guillotine doors, but I'm renaming them. The transfer doors, the doors that slide up and down, like something else that I just mentioned, but for a very different purpose. And a number of them are bent at this point, and they're safe for safety hazard. So replacing them, repairing or replacing them is kind of a priority. They're basically just beyond their usefulness at this point. Security cameras, it depends on who's going to do the install and to the extent. The reality is that that security system, there's a First Avenue has full security on it, has fire and motion, and the doors, all the security on all the doors, there's some motion sensors within. And at this point, we're probably getting an alert at least every other day on average, maybe every 3 days.
Sometimes it goes longer, but yeah.
So, fortunately, it's not ever been serious except for the one time the alarms weren't actually alarmed and there was a break-in. There was some medical supplies stolen. But often what happens is it's a small animal, it's a cat, or it's probably happening more often than dogs, that get loose in the front office and set off the motion alarm. It would be really nice to not have to send out people to the location, but instead be able to monitor that through cameras. And so that's what that would be about. It would save a lot of time on both the Eugene police that respond to these and us who respond personally in the middle of the night.
And also add, it would allow us to, I would say, more immediately determine what action is needed. It's only been a handful of times that there were actually animals out. More often what's triggering the motion alarms are, especially the ones on the doors, there are mice at that facility and they can squeeze in between that gap and actually set off the sensor because they're interrupting the signal. And so then what we get calls about is perimeter alarms because the signal's been interrupted. But they're, we respond and there's actually nothing wrong.
What hours is the place manned where there's people there?
Between 6:30 in the morning and 6:15 to 6:30 at night.
So that's the hours that you're talking about, 6:15 to 6:30. Is that right?
For the time that people are there. And then the alarms are set for the rest of the
year.
So, other items, porta potties and cat cages. So, a little, 2 years ago, it was realized that those 2-foot by 2-foot cat cages aren't really the ideal in humane care for animals. For cats in particular, that are fastidious, and more modern housing has a separation of litter box area from bedding and food area. And the least expensive way of modifying those cages, aside from installing new caging, is to do what's called portalizing. And it's basically taking and cutting a circle through the sides of them and fastening a plastic door in between the two. And there's a kit that you can get from the manufacturer of the cages, and then you would have someone locally do the install on those. So recommend that that would be an additional use. And then the final thing I had on the list was framing in the dishwashing area. So the facility, for those who have been in that dishwashing area, it's open to all of the rest of the facility. It has kind of faux walls that only go up a certain distance. And the dog section is pretty much connected to that section where we also keep cats, who are generally the higher needs cats because it's next to the medical section. So currently we don't have a great separation of species of cats in their most vulnerable state from the barking dogs. The only way to improve upon that is either to completely modify the facility or to go all the way floor to ceiling with the walls. Don't actually think that that's going to be a huge project, but of course it's custom work.
But it creates sanitation issues because there are birds flying over there constantly and dropping their waste on the area.
So that's my list. I didn't check in with Misha before. I didn't know you were speaking on this topic, but I'm guessing that Misha has a list as well.
Go ahead then.
Is that right? Yeah. Okay. So hopefully I can get a little leeway on the 3 minutes because I want to delve into one particular topic that Carrie alluded to that I would probably be speaking on. And the reason why is because, as most of you know, I've been working as a volunteer at the shelter since before it was First Avenue, since it was LCAF. So I think 2012, been there a long time.
Can I just ask you to introduce yourself for
I'm
the
sorry.
Recording?
Misha English, member of the
Thank
public,
you.
Volunteer at First Avenue. So just to orient everybody so we can know what we're talking about, on Carrie's list as a critical need he just explained would be providing some sort of doors that the animals can use themselves to go from the back of the kennel into the front of the kennel, but that will close to keep the heat in. So just to kind of orient you, if you haven't seen it before, the kennels themselves, the front of the kennel, where you'd walk down the center and see all of the dogs lined up in the fronts of their kennels. So that's going to be about 4.5 feet deep, and it's going to be, I think it's about 3 feet wide. So roughly, we're looking at about this. Maybe it's a little bit wider than that, about yay big. And then the back of the kennel is quite a bit larger, and there's the guillotine, or what's your new
doggy door
is good too, which is about 1.5 feet wide by 2.5 feet tall. So you can kind of imagine here's where the dog goes. The idea is that this is where the volunteers get the animal out, or the animal is brought in, and where it's more outside, and so they feel like maybe this is the place they go to the bathroom because they need to feel. A lot of them come in and they are potty trained. So it's really important that they have this place that feels like separate and outside. So in the front area, that's where they're fed and that's where their bed is. But you can imagine with only about this size, okay, that the dog is right in front of the door on their bed, right? Because here's their bed. Either it's blankets on the ground or sometimes it's a raised up bed, depending. Now a lot of the animals that come into the shelter are single coat animals. They don't have an undercoat, okay? The pits don't, the chihuahuas don't. And so they really are the ones that super need temperature control. And I handed out to everybody, and I actually got this from Jacqueline when we had one of our meetings last year, And this is the Guidelines for Standards of Care in Animal Shelters. And this is what, it's a very fat thing all printed out, so I just printed the highlight. But this is what Dr. Gail Schroeder, the Director of Shelter Medicine, follows as far as how the shelter should be run for the optimum care for the animals within the constraints of the shelter. One constraint has been, and one violation of this, or inability to meet this guideline, is on page 9, I have little asterisks here, for dogs and cats, the AVMA recommends the ambient temperature, meaning what is directly around them, should be kept above 60 degrees, and necessary measures should be taken to ensure animal comfort and safety. So the issue here is this. These animals' doors are constantly being opened and closed for a variety of reasons. It's because 3 times a day, wonderfully, and it didn't used to be like this at LCAS, these dogs are being religiously taken out 3 times a day under Green Hills' new scenario. And so staff is constantly going in, grabbing them, putting them in yards, letting them hang out, get sun, or go to the bathroom and come back in. And so that's one reason they're going up and down. Another reason is that volunteers are coming in, taking those dogs out, taking them out in the community, walking around with them, and getting them good exercise, so hopefully they're tired and they have a good night's sleep. Another reason might be that they're getting opened and closed for handling big dogs going back and forth. The point being, they're constantly going up and down, and the stuff is, there's just not enough staff to constantly be a hall monitor going up and down the gangway to make sure dogs are closed in. And then you also have this problem where it's kind of like some of the dogs you don't want to keep in because they're going to be stressed and they are going to break those doors or do their darndest. So they injure themselves on it and they damage those doors. Another reason you want to be careful about who's up and who's down is because you don't want to close them in and preserve the heat for the night because they're potty trained. And that really makes them crazy, and they will hold it sometimes. And then you have UTIs to deal with. You've got urinary tract infections. So this has been a constant struggle for this particular place, and so I have been advocating, so we talked about, you know, the city getting a better heating system, because if everybody hasn't heard me complain about it before, the heating system is the most absurd thing you ever saw. So there's this plank, there's 15 kennels on each side, and this is the walkway where the public goes in and out, and up above, at least 12 feet high, maybe 15, it's way up there, is radiant heat that is expected to get down to those animals that are this high, some of them, on the concrete floor. Okay, and the radiant part of it is only this wide. And then the shell that goes over it that helps focus it is only this wide. And so who gets really warm? The staff, when they're working, and that's blaring on their head. And so they're constantly turning it down because they are dying of heat because they're moving, they have insulated shoes, and they're running, getting their work done. But who doesn't get the heat? These guys down below. And there's no way in the world they're getting the heat when all these transfer doors are open, because they're coming in and out doing all sorts of things. And then it's really awesome in the winter when we have north-south winds whipping through there, and these kennels are oriented north-south. You've got winds whipping in from the north, and these dogs' heat is just going straight out the other side. So I have, over the years, gone in and taken temperatures. I purchased several new ones to make sure that I was accurate. I've got these two styles, and I've got a couple more of these. And I go in and I place it on a bed. And it'll be 45 degrees outside, it's 47 degrees on the bed. 32 degrees outside, 41 degrees on the bed. And I've been documenting this for years, and the city has refused to put money into it. Green Hill can't be expected to do anything about it, but apparently the city makes all the decisions. So supposedly, several months ago, they were going to come in and do new fans to at least try and take that heat. I mean, if you think about it, you're out in a day that's 50 degrees ambient temperature. Brr, we're not comfortable. We go out into the sun, rays directly on our heads, we're warm. Go back into the shade again, we're really cold again. Now add some wind to that, wind chill factor, and that's what these dogs are dealing with. They don't need to be at 71 degrees, but they need to be at 60 degrees, and we are not getting that anywhere near. So what I'm trying to say is this is a basic needs issue. We are not meeting basic needs for these animals. This is not a true shelter if these animals are sitting in 45 degree temperatures. So this bequest brings up an interesting point. What can we do with this money to, I would think, meet the basic needs of the animals? The programs are wonderful, and you really thought about some really good places to put this money. And if we had enough money, I would say let's do it all. But we don't have a lot of money. We've got $126,000 or something. And for $24,000 to finally be able to say these dogs are going to bed in temperatures that we expect per the guidelines of the shelters of care for animal, veterinary animal medicine. And then my last page here features what Green Hill wisely does little PSAs in the wintertime on their website, reminding people how to take care of their animals in the heat and how to take care of their animals in the cold. And here we have a discussion about heat rises. Yes, it does. It rises from 15 feet and goes straight up and doesn't get to the animals. It's cold on the floor. Provide your pet with an elevated, warm, and dry bed or pillow along with a blanket and away from drafts. This is what we expect members in the community to do for their animals. I think it is critical that we do the same thing for the animals that are in our care. It's just a matter of basic needs. And thanks for your time.
So the height of the indoor facility is what? The little 3x5, is that all the same?
It's all
it's open.
Open the ceiling.
Yeah, it's open.
There's
yeah.
no cover.
I mean, if we think of the science of Mother Nature, she parks dogs in little dungeons under the ground in the wintertime. And I think the very least we need to do is somehow have something that holds the heat near them, their own body heat near them. It seems like there ought to be a little cage system in each one of those rooms to keep the heat somewhere close to their own body. You know what I mean? And I tell people all the time, you know, people hate to kennel train their dogs. And I say, the very best thing you can do is just kennel train your dog. Just let them sleep in a little kennel because it keeps their own heat near them.
Yeah, and they don't have any ability
they don't
to hold
have,
that
if
in.
If everything goes up, they
up
lose,
and across, and
they lose 100% if there's a wind blowing over the top. Right. You know, yeah. They need something that has side shoulders, top shoulders,
yeah.
and just right. a little. They need yeah, a little cave. They need a little cave in every one of those kennels.
Okay. Right, and unfortunately, the heating system is radiant heat. So the intention is it's supposed to be heating. It's supposed to be heating down and heating all the surface. So if you put a ceiling over those dog areas, it would actually decrease the amount of heat that reaches the dogs.
So little that their own body heat would make more than make up for it. You know what I mean?
You saw what you're saying.
They
actually
no
use
heat.
The dog itself.
Right.
Yeah, as the heating source, yeah.
They have no heating system. You know?
Right.
Their own body is the only heating system they have.
Well, we do sometimes, for the smaller dogs, we're a crate that would fit them would actually fit in the kennel. We will put those in there sometimes in the winter to
that
allow
least,
them
that at least takes care of something.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's
food portion.
It's amazing. You put that same thermometer in that little cage, and it's 10 degrees warmer, you know, if they can use their own
they're
body.
Spending time in there.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, larger dogs would destroy those kennels.
Well, and also, it is, and we should not exaggerating at all. It's they are literally 3.5 feet wide by 4.5 feet deep.
They're very little.
So, like, putting... And then the door is right in the center, and the access door that we have is right in the front. And
so
putting a crate
I'm not saying
only
it's a
works.
Solution. I'm simply saying that if there was a way to diminish the height of the little cove, I mean, it might be three boards across one side or something like that to somehow keep heat down. Because, I mean, right now you're freezing your butts off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
That's an interesting idea.
I would say it's less problem.
Might be able to drop something.
I'd say it's less problem in the summertime than in the winter.
Yeah, windbreaks of some kind.
Yeah.
So it doesn't blow through.
Just something, you know.
It's a very, it's small and tight.
I understand.
And adding to it is a challenge, and that's
but if you look at a bear, they look for a little cove. Mm-hmm. You look for any animal in a cove, they always look for something small.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they're not going to tear it up. There are dogs that tear things up regardless. But that doesn't mean you abandon all 100 dogs because one is bad.
Yeah.
I mean, the one dog goes in the kennel and you didn't bother fixing. Okay.
Yeah, but this has been a solution that has been proven to work in lots of different kinds of shelters around the country. I'm assuming you're looking at the $800 ones are like the kind of chew-proof ones that are really... are indestructible. And that's
especially they're recommended that... UC Davis is recommending that they be installed. We're actually in our new shelter design, we're looking at installing them even within an indoor area just to control heat to reduce the
expense. But that means the inside then has a lower ceiling, right? Or
no, we're talking about
doors.
We're talking about their saloon doors that you would put into the transfer door area. So
they go all the way to the ceiling.
The transfer door area is only about 2 feet tall. Does that make sense? So this is the door that goes from the inside to the outside.
Okay, that's what I'm saying.
And it's just,
there is a
wall,
like a
door.
Right, exactly. There's a definite break right there. Okay.
Yeah. The issue is to the outdoor area are covered, so they're in constant shade. And in the winter, so this is mostly the issue in the winter, which means the rainy season here. So dogs are coming in and out. They're getting wet. They're bringing water back in. The outside, and we're cleaning inside. The heat, inside it ends up being dry. Because we have the radiant heaters, they end up drying the floor, except you have the wet dog. But on the outside, those outside runs end up staying wet. And they're shaded, and there's wind blowing. It's
and the air conditioner.
And it's open. You know, 1.5 feet wide by 2 feet tall, right where the dog is. And we've actually looked at, well, actually, if you have the dog on the ground, as opposed to what we want to do is have them all up on raised beds, Caronda beds, so that keeps them actually a little bit drier. But the reality is the ground is actually, and sometimes warmer because of the radiant heat. And it's kind of a mess. There's no real good solution, short of really putting these doors in. And then the next step, obviously, is redesigning the kennel. But
know half the dogs that you do this with, they'll be sleeping outside at night at 40 degrees
but then
below
at least
zero.
They have a choice.
I'm
saying that.
They're right. Focused on that.
I mean, even after the AVMA recommends 60 degrees, most dogs hate 60 degrees if they have any coat at all. They like it cooler than that, you know, so... Yeah. I know those are still the recommendations we make, but at times go really.
Yeah, the pits will stay inside.
Yeah.
And so many of them are little chihuahuas.
Yeah.
And so it would be great.
And the property is owned by the cities of Springfield, Eugene, and County. Is that
right? Yes, it's a joint agreement.
And the city, neither of the cities will help with any of that from doors.
So the City of Eugene has taken on the primary maintenance responsibilities for the facility back in 2012 when all of this got reconfigured and we entered into the contract relationships. So City of Eugene, basically we report to them when there are maintenance issues with the facility. There are some responsibilities that we have that are set out in our City of Eugene contract, but all the major stuff, they have taken on that responsibility on behalf of the City of Springfield and Lane County. But I don't know how to phrase it, but it's while they have done a lot of actually some fairly significant improvements to the facility, there are some things that I think it's just not a priority given the number of other properties and things that they're managing.
Just one final thing, and so I heard that everybody was talking about you don't have a quorum now, and I don't know if the county needs definitive recommendation from this group, or such that you'd have to wait until November and hope for a quorum then. I'm just thinking we're coming into the winter season again, and it would be nice to not have to wait until these things, you know, approval if it was approved, and then you order them, and then they get installed, and then it's April. So I'm just wondering if there's the possibility of expediting this decision based on that possibly one of the front runners is something that would keep the animals' basic needs met as far as comfort.
The process moving forward from here, it's that for the committee to come up with some options and hopefully get send that to the board. Because the money came in as a gift, the board has to authorize how it is spent. So we as staff can't decide how it's spent, and as a committee you guys can't decide how it's spent, but we can send something to the board with options and recommendations, and then they have the ultimate authority for what it gets spent on. So in terms of expediting, you know, until we have a quorum for the committee members to come up with something to deliver to the board as a group with those options, and you know, board meetings after that, it's probably not going to be expedited. It's probably going to be looking at a couple months.
Mm-hmm.
if not longer, depending on when we finally get a quorum and get a decision and pare it down to some viable options that are good with the committee, that are good with staff, and that we think, you know, will actually achieve some goals.
So you're saying this would go to the Board of Commissioners?
It will go to the Board of Commissioners. They have to authorize any expenditures of funds.
Mm-hmm. Would that happen at one of their public meetings, or what would be the process for them to make that decision?
I don't, Mike, you're...
Yeah, it'd be a regular business meeting.
So you could say everything you just said.
And so with that, I'll chime in real quick. I talked to one of our budget officer for Public Works. One of the other options was asking and dealing with, could this money be invested? And what investment options are out there, and is that viable? And in talking to her, it's really not a viable option. With the rate of return that the county gets, about 1%, you know, that's not going to be a whole lot to fund any sort of new program or to have anything in perpetuity. Some of the other options that were out there, you know, were, you know, for grants and for funding and scholarships, those kinds of things. And there's really, it doesn't look like there's going to be something that can go long-term with this via investment. So I wanted to put that out there as well, that, you know, a 1% return is not a whole lot on this to keep going forward.
Thank you, Charlie.
Yeah.
So were there any other questions, comments with regard to this?
I guess I would suggest that if you want to move it forward, I think without a quorum, they could set up a committee to draft something to bring. Maybe that.
A subcommittee could come up with something, but the subcommittee could not say that this is coming from them.
I'm just wondering if, like, maybe a couple of them could work on drafting.
They could, but
it later, and then it'll be ratified at the next quorum of this meeting.
Yes, I mean, something could, if the committee wants something to come from the committee, there has to be a quorum. But if a group or a subcommittee, if you want to put together a subcommittee or however it wants to take form, that group can come up with something, and the quorum could then vote on, yes, we agree with this, we want to make a recommendation. Whatever route they want to go, then that can definitely happen. But no, a smaller group can come up with a list, but in order, you know, preferably it comes from the committee with a quorum voting on that, yes, this is what we want.
Yeah. So I suggest that, so that when you have a quorum at your next meeting, you could say, yep, this looks good, and you can make edits to it, and then at the end of that meeting, you'll actually have something to present.
I think a better, well, not better, but at least an additional thing that you might want is, if we can remember when they can actually meet, we should try to have a meeting on the date that we can all get together, and it's supposed to be decided today, and I think there was a date listed, the 17th?
17th, which would be the...
So let's schedule it on the 17th so that we can maybe have a quorum next month, and then we don't have to wait until November to get the decision to be able to spend the money, which is why I don't do public.
You've been doing it for a long time. You're someone that doesn't do it.
As a volunteer, can you believe that? But the reality is that you got to get stuff done. And whatever that gets done, even if it's not perfect, somebody used an email to let us know when they could get here, but I didn't join in on that, by the way, because I wouldn't want to do something like that, of course. Let's do it the day that they can get here, okay?
Okay. How would you guys like to come up with a list to bring to that committee, or how would you like to start paring this down? We have a lot of options. Gary's got quite a few. We had quite a few that came up last meeting. So that's the trick, is how to actually pare this down into something that's manageable and that votes can be taken on and decisions can be made.
Can we email within a subcommittee our ideas? I mean,
you can. Yes, you can work within a subcommittee. Can work within a subcommittee. The issue becomes when there's a quorum.
Okay.
So if a subcommittee of three people were formed, and if the emails were only within that subcommittee of three people and there was no chance of it being a quorum, then you can do that.
We ran into this with the Parks Advisory Committee, and even if two members get together,
That's exactly right.
You have to notify the public.
Even a subcommittee.
Yeah, you can't be doing that. But I do think we have to listen to people that know. And if they have a priority list, I mean, okay, it's $129,000. It's a nice chunk of money, okay? But it doesn't go very far when you really start spending money.
And well, I added up Carrie's list, and it's 71 grand.
Yeah, I mean, it goes in a hurry, okay? And I think if we have people working there and they have priorities, I think we ought to listen to what they have to say about their priorities too. And I think we could vote on it next meeting without a huge hoopla about what we should do. I mean, if they're strong recommendations and it's a timely thing to do, then, I mean, I'd like to see the money also maybe spent to troubleshoot for the future building they're going to have or something like that. But that'll come in due time. And if we have something that helps from, I wasn't here when they presented what this lady wants, but I'm sure she wants something for the welfare of the dogs. And you're talking about the welfare of the dogs, and to me that makes perfect sense, okay? So what you present makes perfect sense. Do something today for them, you know. Don't wait 10 years to finally get the building that finally takes care of dogs when I'm dead.
And they were long-term improvements.
Yes.
Too.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's what I look for is, you know.
I would go buy a washing machine tomorrow. If you need how expensive is a dishwasher, for Christ's sake?
Oh.
It's more
involved.
Yeah,
we actually want to move beyond the dishwasher.
Okay.
It's because, you know, stuff that we're putting through it isn't good for any dishwasher. So what we want to do is move to a 3-compartment stainless sink. Because right now that is not what we have. We have a somewhat home use, non-ish. The sink itself is stainless, but the rest of it is not stainless, and it's
rotting MDF.
What's that?
It's rotting MDF. Mm-hmm. But
okay. I mean, if it was just a simple, large industrial dishwasher, you'd have that in tomorrow. You know about a hand washing kind of a station? 3 hand washing?
That's what we're looking at.
Okay.
Because then they can soak for the sanitizing.
What's that?
It allows for scrubbing and then soaking and then rinsing, which is a more efficient process.
They said dishwasher. I didn't realize they were talking about people. I
thought we have generous volunteers like us with the physical work of it.
Have you guys approached Curtis Restaurant Equipment for that?
Not yet, but that's on the agenda.
I could imagine that happening from them.
Yeah.
I think so too. I think if you ask the right people and you can get things done, you know. Public helps if they know what you need, but you have to have a very specific need.
Yeah.
And then you put their name on it or something, donated by or...
Right.
Huh?
Well, this is kind of our wish list of things that we do have. Kind of, if someone's like, I have some money, what can we do with it?
Yeah.
This is...
Would you go 50-50,
like
donate 50, we pay 50,
right.
And
right.
We come out, we both come out whole, you know?
Yeah.
So going forward, would you guys like Carrie to come up with a list of projects, and then I will disseminate that to the committee to ruminate on, and then during the next meeting, hopefully everybody will have reviewed that, come up with ideas, and
that's,
we can work with that.
That's
that sounds
what
good?
I was going to suggest.
Are you willing to do that, Carrie?
Do you want me to take this full list and prioritize them? Does that work, or do you want me to narrow down some? Is there anything that's not exciting I can just eliminate from this?
Take the full list, we can narrow down.
Okay, so I will draft it as an official list from Green Hill.
Okay.
Form to the committee.
Yeah, if you'll send it to me, then I'll send it out to them.
I'll send it to you.
And then hopefully everybody will read it, have a chance to think about it, and we'll discuss it next time.
Okay. That sounds great.
People come prepared to vote.
Mm-hmm.
So that brings us to when we're going to meet next.
17th.
17th.
Works for me. Yeah.
Okay, so we
all
of us present here agree on the 17th. So
okay, I will send out an email that the next meeting has been rescheduled to October 17th, same time, and I'll verify that we still have the room available.
I have to make sure we don't have a C meeting in that time, but I think it's okay. I think it's a week before, so 17th.
Okay, so you're pretty confident you'll be here. So the three people here are pretty confident they'll be here on the 17th.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can get one more person, then we'll at least have quorum for the 17th.
Yep.
Okay.
I think David said he could be here the 17th and the 3rd, but not the 10th, so I think he should be here.
Dr. Young is having bypass surgery currently, right now.
Oh.
That's that's why he's not here today. And I don't know if he'll be here in a month because I just don't know.
Yeah.
Just scheduled.
Okay.
What was I just thinking about? Just heads up too that I don't remember who else. I think you were to check, Mike, what other committee members' terms end in December.
Yeah, but so reappointing to do in December. Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So shall we adjourn then?
Michelle, do you want to adjourn for the time for the reporter?
Yes, so we will adjourn the meeting now. It is 4:20. Thank you.